Support comes from Mosby Building Arts, crafting kitchens that encourage connection and creativity. Details at callmosby.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Last month, a peculiar scene played out in a federal court hearing. The case involved an international student working toward a PhD in Texas. The student had recently been informed by his university that he could no longer attend classes or work for the school. And the reason for the change was that his name had been removed from a special government database called the Student and Exchange Visitor Information System, or SEVIS. SEVIS is how the U.S. State Department and the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency keep track of the thousands of students who are getting their education in this country with visas granted by the U.S. State Department. But all that changed about April 1st when thousands of students were informed they had been removed from SEVIS. In response, hundreds filed lawsuits, including this Nigerian PhD student in Texas. On April 23rd, U.S. District Judge Sparkle Sikananan heard this case. The transcript of that hearing is a strange read. The judge repeatedly asks the government's representative, attorney John Carilli, to explain, Joseph Carilli, to explain why this student was terminated from the SEVIS database. Carilli's response, repeated over some 30 pages, was almost always a form of, "I have not been authorized to respond." He offered instead that he had asked the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, to explain what was going on, only they hadn't gotten back to him. In the end, Judge Sikananan issued a temporary restraining order against the government's action against this student. She said, "This court has no assurance that the plaintiff will not be picked up and deported to El Salvador or some other country tomorrow." Then, only days after the hearing, ICE and the Trump administration appeared to backtrack, restoring thousands of international students to the SEVIS database. But those students still have a lot to worry about. And here to talk with us about the legal whiplash they've faced in recent weeks and what happens next, I'm joined by immigration attorney Jim Hacking. Jim, welcome to the show.
Elaine, thanks for having me.
So that was a long sort of lead up, but there is reason for that. Jim, I mentioned a Nigerian student who went to court after finding out he'd been removed from that database, SEVIS, and you represented him in a lawsuit and won that temporary restraining order. Please help us understand how things get started for students like your client. How did he find out that the government had taken this action against him, and what did that mean?
I think it's important to understand that international students are admitted for what's called duration of status. So unlike regular people who come on a visit visa, international students, as long as they keep going to school, they could be here for years and years on a F1 status. The F1 visa is the ticket into the United States, but once they're here, they're admitted for duration of status. So you could get your associate's degree, your bachelor's degree, your master's degree, your PhD, all in F1 status without ever leaving the United States or getting a new visa.
Mm-hmm.
So our client, James, was one of those international students. He had had an interaction with law enforcement about a year and a half ago during a medical emergency that he was having. Law enforcement thought he was trying to evade arrest. He was having a medical emergency. Once they realized that he was having that medical emergency, the prosecutor dropped the charges. And so that was his only interaction with law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened was James was, like you said, working on his PhD. He was working on campus at the University of Texas. And they sent him an email from the International Student Office that his status in SEVIS had been terminated. And that has a whole bunch of consequences.
So did he come immediately to you? How are you connected with him?
I have a YouTube channel where I talk about immigration stuff every day, and so he found me on YouTube.
Okay. Now, you'd mentioned F1 status, and the F1 visa is supposed to allow a student to stay in this country and study. So was that visa affected by this action with SEVIS? Were these visas revoked?
So the State Department has the authority to revoke students' visas. But ICE did not have the authority to terminate these students' CVIS records. In other words, just because your visa gets revoked doesn't mean you have to leave the United States. It doesn't mean that you have to stop going to school. It just means the next time you leave the United States, mm-hmm. you're going to have to stop by the embassy and hopefully get a new visa to come back.
So is people's not necessarily understanding that well part of the reason there are these confusions, the alarm that happens, why the student reached out to you?
Right. So everyone was worried and scared. And like you said, there were over 100 lawsuits filed across the country. We filed 10 in our office, 6 of them in D.C. And this particular judge that we had, she sort of moved more quickly. I believe she came to the United States as a young person on an international student on an F-1 visa herself. Mm-hmm. So I think she was especially tuned into what was happening. And we filed a request for a temporary restraining order. She gave the government the chance to interact and argue whether that should be granted. And after that hearing that you outlined, that is a very curious read, she decided to grant the temporary restraining order.
Mm-hmm. Before we go to the hearing again, was it the case that ICE only targeted students with some kind of criminal history or record with law enforcement?
Yeah, so what turns out happened, which we found out later, not even on that hearing, but we found out more about it this Monday in a subsequent hearing, is after President Trump issued his executive order asking ICE to focus on international students who had protested Israel, that somebody at Homeland Security Investigations, HSI, somebody high up, said, hey, while we're at it, let's go ahead and run all the international students in the United States, which was 1.5 million international students, through the NCIC. It's a criminal database. And then they were told to find out the person's name, find out the charge. If you can, find out what the disposition was. But regardless of that, they ran everybody through that database, and they came up with about 16,000 names. And that eventually got whittled down to 5,500. And it was 5,500 international students who had their records terminated by ICE.
So that kind of gets into a how, Jim. But was there any explanation, any why, provided for why ICE would single out your client in this manner?
Because he had had that interaction with law enforcement when he had that medical condition.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing in our case is the government filed a sort of pro forma affidavit from someone at Homeland Security explaining the facts of our case. But in their own affidavit, they said that they knew that the charges had been dismissed against James at the time that they terminated his CVIS record. They didn't care. It was just the fact that he had any kind of interaction with law enforcement, so they wanted him to get out.
And again, to clarify, there is an arrest on the client's background. It was related to a medical emergency. Charges were dropped. That was enough to put him in legal danger?
Not in the real world, but in Trumplandia it is.
Mm-hmm. We're talking today with Jim Hacking, an immigration attorney whose clients were recently targeted by the Trump administration's actions to revoke and then reinstate student visas. So this all happened, Jim, a few weeks ago, and that was in early April. It affected more than 25 students in the St. Louis area. As this all was happening, what were you hearing as an attorney? And what were students telling you?
Great question. Literally every single international student who called our office could not get through the call explaining what happened to them without breaking down crying. They were heartbroken. These international students, some of them have been here for 4, 7, 9 years. They've spent more money on their education than U.S. students. International students pay the highest rate. They had done all this work. Many of them are right at the cusp of either being able to graduate or be able to work, and to have the rug pulled out from them basically a month right before exams start was heartbreaking. And these stories just were one after the other, just tragedy.
Mm-hmm. Now, these students, at the universities where they've been studying, the universities themselves were caught off guard in some way. I mean, do schools have any tools to help students who are coming with them with these, or coming to them, that is, with these problems?
As you explained in your introduction, CVIS is the way that international student officers at schools interact with the government explaining what an international student is doing. What we have found out through the course of the lawsuit is that in 2024, ICE terminated a total of 6 international students' CVIS records the entire year. So this was a sea change. Generally, the international student offices are the ones who terminate someone's status, perhaps because they stopped going to class, they ghosted the school, they've been working without permission, they violated their status somehow. This is unprecedented that ICE would terminate their CVIS records. And then when they get called to the carpet, as you mentioned in that hearing, and then later, what they tried to say was, oh, well, we didn't tell these schools to tell these students they had to leave the United States. We didn't tell them that they couldn't keep going to class. This is all on the universities. It's not our fault.
The universities, I mean, how well equipped are they now to deal with this?
I'm giving a talk tomorrow to 600 international student advisors, and it'll be very interesting to hear the feedback when I walk them through what they've done. But basically, what ICE did was they took that list and then they sent it to the State Department and said, hey, State Department, do you want to revoke these guys' visas? And State Department said, oh, sure. And so then they sent the list of people who had their visas revoked back to ICE so that then ICE thought they had a facially valid reason for terminating their status and telling them to get out.
Mm-hmm. Jim, you made a quip earlier about the difference between the real world and Trumplandia. What is this distinction that you are making, you know, for an immigration attorney? That being, you know, the very particular perspective and position you have, what does Trumplandia look like from the inside?
Well, here's the thing, Elaine. The federal government has the power to force an international student to leave the United States, but that's prescribed by statute. There are regulations that govern that. So the idea that they can go extrajudiciously and outside the system and just terminate these students' records, this was not an accident. This is on purpose. They want to terrorize legal immigrants to the United States. They couched the rhetoric all during the campaign that they were against illegal immigration, but they are just as concerned and just as fighting just as hard to freak out legal immigrants in the United States, and this is part of the life that we call Trumplandia.
Mm-hmm. There were many lawsuits, Jim, that were filed in response to this action, CVIS, ICE. I mean, was that in any way a coordinated effort?
No. In fact, everyone was trying to find more people to help. So, you know, I said on my show the other day that I was so disheartened by the folding by big law firms when it came to Trump trying to issue executive orders against them or to sanction these big law firms, and they all folded, and they have promised and pledged $1 billion of free legal aid to Trump causes. And that was like the lowest point for me as an attorney, to think that people would do that when they had all the resources, all the power to fight back. And we know that when you fight back against Trump, they back down because they're a paper tiger. So I, converse to that, when I saw all these little individual immigration law firms like mine standing up to the Trump administration in courts throughout the land, I was never more proud to be an immigration lawyer and to be fighting for immigrants like we do every day.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jim, you filed this lawsuit in April. You won a restraining order for your client. And then just a few days later, the Trump administration and ICE seem to, you just mentioned that the reverse, you know, pulling away. For instance, this Monday, this week, the Department of Homeland Security informed Webster University that all 26 of its students who had their visas revoked are now reinstated and that their CVIS records are restored. So what is it that happened here? Were you expecting this to some degree?
Right. So when they folded and when they decided to backtrack, the judges weren't having it and they wanted to make sure that these students were protected. And so in our case and in other cases, the judges called DHS representatives to these hearings and made them explain to the courts what happened. They would never give a justification or an explanation as to what the mindset was. They just talked about what actually happened. And then to try and remedy that, our judge and other judges are making them reinstate them to the date that they were terminated, to say that they are not having negative consequences as a result of the break and that there is no break in status. So when students like at Webster or elsewhere, that's just a benefit of the change in policy because of all the lawsuits that were filed.
Mm-hmm. What is it now that you're hearing from your clients who are, I mean, when we say client, it sounds very almost clinical. I mean, these are people. What are you hearing from them about how they're doing?
Our judge was especially upset at the idea that here are these international students going about their lives, trying to wind up their studies for the year. And this is the way she would say it. They had to hire lawyers to go and fight for what their rights were to be here, that they shouldn't have to do this. So clients now, I mean, international students are wary. And I asked a question on LinkedIn a couple weeks ago. Tell me why any international student would want to come here when this is the kind of stuff that's happening to them.
Mm-hmm. Well, and nationwide, the number of applicants coming from international students has dropped, which has a lot of consequences for things that are not directly linked to a university, but with local economy and that sort of thing. Does this change, Jim, the lawsuit that you filed on behalf of your students, this backtracking? Does the backtrap do anything to the files that you, or the lawsuits that you filed already?
Right. So we're in the process of determining what we're going to do with the lawsuits. The judge had this hearing on Monday. She heard from the government for the first time. There were actually people there who could answer her questions. She seemed to be much more satisfied that these students were being placed back in the position that they were before. But we have to remember that along with the putting the students back into status, they also issued a new memo. That it's a 1.5-page memo. It's sort of cryptic. It sort of seems to be a power grab that they still are saying that they have authority outside what Congress has given them by legislation. And so I think the next fight will be, well, what's going to be round two of this? How is ICE going to move forward? Like, they got their butts beat, but they're not going to just sit on that. They're going to be coming back probably more aggressively, mm-hmm. and we're going to have to wait and see how that plays out.
Yeah. To what extent, Jim, are universities helping their international students?
Just as I told you, I was very proud of the immigration bar. I'm also very, very heartened by the international student offices. Now, it's in their financial best interest. The fact is, international students subsidize every university, and if international students go down, like you said, mm-hmm. there are going to be universities like Fontbonne that are just going to close because they're not going to have the tuition to pay for everybody else. So. But that being said, they really went out of their way to do everything they can to try to protect these students. But, you know, international student advisors and universities take different tacks. You know, state schools in red states are handling things very differently than private schools in blue states.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jim, I realize that I'm about to ask you about an active case that you're involved in. But what is it? What was your impression of what went on in that court hearing last month? You know, the judge hammered the government attorney, and she said he was misleading her, you know, evading questions. How unusual is that?
It's very, very unusual for any attorney to not be able to answer a judge's questions like that. But when you're talking about the U.S. attorney for the District of Columbia, this is under Ed Martin, who is the interim attorney, U.S. attorney for the District of Columbia. I've never seen such disarray or answers from a prosecutor or U.S. attorney like that. In my experience, having litigated cases like this for decades, U.S. attorneys are always on top of their game. They're given great deference in the courtroom, and none of that was happening either at that prior hearing 2 weeks ago or the one we just had this last Monday.
Mm-hmm. I mean, is the government allowed to do this, to not provide answers to a judge?
I think what was really happening, Elaine, on that Monday was they were already thinking that they were going to backtrack on this and that they didn't want to say anything on the record that would either hinder their ability to do that or to explain what they had done. Mm-hmm. So I think that the reason they kept not answering was because they thought, if I could just delay this a few days, we know that the administration's going to reverse the decision because it was so illegal.
Mm-hmm. So there must be a great deal of uncertainty for these students. What are the answers that they're still waiting for?
Am I going to be able to stay here? Is it safe for me to be here? You know, one thing, Elaine, that no one's really talked about is some students were so freaked out that they went ahead and left. They went ahead and left because, like, I had a kid from India worried, his parents were worried that he was going to get sent to Guatemala. And the judge referenced that herself. That was all on her own. Mm-hmm. But with all the things, like today, they said they're going to deport people to Libya. These international students are wisely wondering, why am I here, or am I going to be able to stay here, or what kind of life can I build here when the anti-immigrant sentiment from the government is so hostile?
Mm-hmm. What kind of advice are you giving to these students and to their families?
Right. So if anyone has had some kind of a criminal interaction or had something more serious or substantial than our client did, and I should point out that all 10 of our clients, only one of them had something that actually ended up in charges. So 9 of the 10 had no real criminal things. So they have to ask themselves, you know, is it safe to go back home? If my visa has been revoked, am I going to be able to get a new one? You know, how long will I have to stay here before I can get some other kind of status? You know, in a way, it's going to become its own prison, because if they leave the United States and their visa has been revoked, they're probably not coming back. So they're really having to make some huge life decisions, not being able to see mom or dad for years, or staying here and building the life that they're hoping to build.
Mm-hmm. To what extent do you expect judges, Jim, to continue to ask for answers from the government and to not get any answers?
So the Project 2025 crowd came into this administration with the hopes of being able to greatly expand the power of the executive to deport people. You saw things like the Alien Enemies Act and all these, courtroom after courtroom, they're just getting pounded, including by judges appointed by Donald Trump himself. So I think they're going to keep pushing the envelope, but I also think judges, like the great judge we had in D.C. and many of the great judges that we had on all these cases, that they are really going to hold the government's feet to the fire, and that deference that U.S. attorneys in the government's position has always received is going to be greatly diminished.
Mm-hmm. Jim Hacking is an immigration attorney in St. Louis. He's representing multiple international students whose records were terminated and then restored by the Trump administration late last month. Jim, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Elaine.
This episode was produced by Danny Wisentowski.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.